Tuesday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. Phone lines are open, 651-989-5855. Got a couple of segments with open lines before we're joined by our energy guru, Isaac Orr, coming in studio from the Center of the American Experiment.
Valley Fair opens on Friday.
I've never been.
Me neither.
Me neither. I've always wanted to, though.
Wow. Three ringing endorsements for Valley Fair.
I've yet to go to Valley Fair.
I know the family has. I know
my children have.
But
in fact, yeah, I think everybody in my family has, except for me. Yeah,
I tend to like my attractions to be dark rides on boats with pirates.
So one. How many of those attractions do you like?
I was just pointing out to one. I also like them in haunted houses too. You know, sort of mediocre roller coaster train rides. Same thing for space rides. Yeah. I used to be
mega into roller coasters. Like I would go seek them out and go on every one. But you know, as I've aged, the roller coasters they take more of a toll. I feel like a little banged up when I get off of them now, and I'm like, that wasn't as fun as I remembered when I was younger. They make me feel old now, is basically the short version. Yeah. Roller coasters make me feel my age.
They just made me feel scared.
I loved them. I loved them.
I still do.
I shouldn't say past tense. I mean, if I got on one, I'm sure I'd have a good time.
But the
desire to be on them has waned a lot in the last few years.
Anything at Disneyland, I'll do. And I'll even do like a California Adventure. I'll do like California Screamin', which is a, you know, roller coaster. That one's okay. I just was never, ever a fan of roller coasters growing up at all. I like my theme parks themed. I like the immersive experience of going to a place, even like a Knott's Berry Farm, which I lived really close to.
What? A Knott's?
You don't?
You never heard of Knott's Berry Farm?
Never heard about?
No.
Wow.
Yeah, it's.
It sounds like a wine resort.
It's kind of the Valley Fair of Anaheim.
Yeah, it's got a lot more theming to it than that. It's a couple rungs down from your Disneyland. It's in the same area. Like that whole part of Southern California has you know, Knott's Berry Farm and Disneyland. They're
cheaper version of Disneyland.
Yeah,
that was the idea, I guess, when it was created.
Old West themed. Yeah. They had the Peanuts IP. There, you know, so they had a lot of that, but I went on the wooden roller coaster it was the only wooden roller coaster I've ever been on. Was at Knott's Berry Farm? Scared the daylights out of me.
The wooden roller coaster,
just clanky and noisy.
I love wooden roller coasters, but those are the ones specifically that I really feel my age when I get off of them, because you know, it's just so vibratey.
You can make a brand new wooden roller coaster and it'd be janky as hell. Let's be honest.
Years ago, I told the story before. We did. I did do Busch Gardens. I did do Busch Gardens once.
Yeah. Some of the best roller coasters in the land are at Busch Gardens.
Did a remote there when I was doing rock radio, and we did a few day stint at Walt Disney World, and we've talked about this before. That was awesome because we did a broadcast in each of the parks, and every night they shut the parks down just for all the radio hosts, and then across the parks in specific locations they had buffets and open bars. It was amazing. But I was terrified because we went down there. I don't even know if it's still there anymore. The Mission to Mars ride inside of Epcot, which is essentially
I've actually ridden that.
It's the theme park ride equivalent of using the technology that they test astronauts for. You've always seen in the movies when they put you in the box and it spins you in a circle and it gives you that ride. Showed me that I had a bit of claustrophobia in me because that's terrifying. Because you're stuck looking at the screen just right around your face and you're spinning really fast, and I just wanted it to end.
I'm surprised you haven't made like multiple trips to either Galaxy's Edge or.
I haven't been yet.
See, that's going to be my June trip.
No, I had.
Can't wait.
I had they were doing Star Wars Celebration in 2020. Right, because I went in 2015 in Anaheim, and I had the entire trip paid for. It was 4 days at all the parks in Southern California. It was passes for the entire family. I'd saved up for it, paid for it, everything. That we were staying at the nice resort, the whole nine yards. And then that pesky thing called COVID hit. And now, now it's happening next week, and, you know, I'm going through testing.
No!
Stuff,
so.
Anyway, Valley Fair opens up this weekend.
That's where we go.
The park will host a variety of events and festivals that span throughout summer. This month, you now have Soak City opening weekend.
Okay.
Amusement park goers can hang out on the water slides. I do love water slides. I haven't been on one in a long, long time. I don't know if I would now. It's been many years, but I used to love going to water parks.
Water parks are fun.
Water parks were a blast.
That's one thing that is an aspect that I miss of having small children. Is the sort of excuse, you know, to go to water parks and theme parks. You know, it's just like as an adult now, it just doesn't seem like it's the draw really isn't there now that I don't have the small children anymore.
See, that's what I miss about being a small child like there's a pool like place by my apartment. And I want to go there, but I'm like, I'm 25. I can't go there alone. Like, I'm going to be put on a list. Yeah, I can't do that. But I want to really bad. I want to go down the water slides, man.
Me and the wife were talking about this the other day when we were watching something, and a big Disney ad popped up, and the theme parks, and we hadn't been in so long, and there was that moment of nostalgia, like, oh, I miss doing that. And then I had the realization of, like, you know, I may never go to any of these again, you know, now that I don't have, unless I get the grandkids, you know, happening at some point, you know, because I just don't have the small kids anymore. And it's
what, to Disney?
Well, to like theme parks in general, not necessarily.
Right, okay, Disney okay. Yeah. But, I mean, absolutely. You know. I would live in Disneyland if I could. I wrote a whole book where that happens. Yeah, book 5 in my series, The Rocket Queen, takes place inside of
Disneyland. Available on Amazon.
It is.
J.O. Justice.
Book 7 comes out on Thursday, by the way. I haven't mentioned it yet, but that comes out on. Looking forward to that. By the way, real quick, I do.
I can't believe you've written 7 books. That's insane.
I can't either.
In like 5 years.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
I should get in contact with George R. R. Martin, honestly, at that rate. He could use some pointers.
Yeah, maybe he could finish up that Winds of Winter or Dance of Dragons. I'm supposed to get.
Look, I have a hard enough time. I have a hard enough time keeping up with my own characters. I can't follow Game of Thrones nonsense. I can't even find likes. I like Lord of the Rings, and I can't follow that either. Real quick, I echo your. Don't have children anymore, right? Also, don't have the body confidence anymore for water parks. So, just wanted to add that in there.
That's why God made long t-shirts.
I wear this long.
That's why God
water t-shirt
made long floppy t-shirts.
It'll hide all my fat
for guys like me
or
at water parks.
It'll just highlight it with fabric.
JR in Minneapolis. Good morning.
Morning, gentlemen. Anecdotally on the water slide. Comment. My favorite is as an adult going into the Mall of America, riding their log plume, and walking around with a wet butt. My actual comment, you maybe already talked about this with the returning the overcollected tax funds, is I believe there's some states that wrote legislation that requires the state to return those funds.
Yes.
As an automatic function. And I just feel like left to our own devices. At the legislative level, we're always making decisions based on current circumstances, and we need to write this stuff into law.
I agree. Good call, JR. Appreciate it.
You know what?
Yeah, they do. I don't know which ones off the top of my head. I've seen those numbers or seen those stats before of states that have legislation basically codified into law saying that, you know, when you have a surplus, that you automatically return as much of it as you can, or, you know, whatever the different legislation may read, but it is an automatic trigger when you have a surplus. And this state, more than any other that I've ever followed or paid attention to, should have a law like that, absolutely. But you're not going to get one with a DFL holding any of those branches, you know, in the legislature or in the executive branch. It's just not happening.
It's fun. I'm really thankful you went on that very insightful rant right there, because I was going to offer up a hypothetical, but in the middle of when you were, I'm going to offer it anyways. But in the middle of when you were talking, I gave my own answer. So my hypothetical was going to be. For as much as the left really backs the left up, right? And at least that's perception. That you know, the left is really good, and the DFL Democrats are really, really good at coalescing around each other and having each other's backs. So my hypothetical was, with that being true, it would seem to me that Tim Walz could say, you know what? I'm going to give all that money back. We're going to proportionally give back every penny to the voters in Minnesota from the surplus that we took. And in theory, the left would go and back him up because that's what the left does. But in the middle of when you were talking, I suddenly talked myself out of it because I actually do know what would happen, because that wouldn't happen. Because if Walz did that, there's too many groups out there and interest groups that want to get their hands on that money that now wouldn't be able to. That would go, it would be minority in size. I think voters on the left would back Walz if he were to go and do that and give it back. But I think there's too many of those activist groups would just apply too much pressure, vocal pressure on him to caving on something like that. And that's really unfortunate, because I feel like Walz could take the wind out of the GOP sails in a lot of ways if you were to go and make a move like that and be brave enough to push back against those minority incised groups that would complain because they wouldn't be able to, you know, dip their hands in the honey jar on that. But we all know that's who they're beholden to. They're beholden to all of those interest groups. They're beholden to those activists, right? They're shackled. They're shackled to them, regardless of how big they are.
Yep. That's you're 100% right.
It's just unfortunate. It's just unfortunate we can't make any headway because of that.
This state is governed not necessarily by the people that you voted for and elected in office. It's governed by Education Minnesota. It's governed by the environmental lobby. It's governed by the far left sort of radical wings, you know, and the special interests that fund the DFL.
Yeah,
that's who governs Minnesota.
John,
not Tim Walz.
John Thompson. All right. I don't even know what, I'd have things to say about this, but my gosh, this is utterly ridiculous. Out of Alpha News, the Pledge of Allegiance in at least one Roseville public school is now preceded with a land acknowledgement and BLM statement.
No!
All Minnesota public and charter schools are required by law to lead students in reciting the pledge at least one time a week.
Yeah, and that's apparently incredibly resented by certain schools and certain teachers and certain administrations, that they are required by law to do the Pledge of Allegiance once a week.
One time.
Once a week, so they're going to stick it to them, right?
Now, Roseville schools maintain compliance with this policy, but at least one elementary school in the district has inserted politically charged language into what is usually a brief moment of patriotism. So there was a photograph taken recently in a Roseville elementary school that shows the following affirmation of Black Lives Matter that takes place before students turn to the flag.
Who thought this was a good idea?
People in this Roseville school who are idiots.
It tells you how deep they have infiltrated, that these activists with these political agendas have infiltrated our public schools, that they're able to say just before the Pledge of Allegiance, which is benign. It's a benign thing to have kids do. Kids have done it for generations, but for Roseville schools, they make the kids say this before they say the Pledge of Allegiance. Today, we say the Pledge of Allegiance, recognizing that we may each feel differently about our role and place in this nation. We recognize that the land we are on was seized from the Dakota people. We recognize and affirm that the lives of our Black, Indigenous, and people of color matter. Each of us is a unique and contributing member of our school community. I'm basically a slave to my whiteness.
Thanks, Tim.
The Roseville
might as well be in there.
The Roseville School District ISD 623 has formally upheld since 2019 that their schools are located on land seized from the Dakota people.
Well, then tear them down.
Seriously,
you know, if you're that upset by it,
yeah,
that bothered by it, if you're that moved by it, what are you doing contributing to the ongoing injustice? Tear them down.
Make it a class project. Have the school kids help you out.
Yeah, there you go.
Gonna watch my words carefully here. It's a joke, people. Right. Despite this, the district does not seem to have made any meaningful attempt to give the land back. Now, further, education expert Catherine Kirsten of the Center of the American Experiment, had her on the show before, says the U.S. didn't even steal the land from the Dakota people. The land acknowledgement statement that Roseville students are reportedly being required to recite is historically false.
That's never stopped them before.
In reality, the Dakota seized land in question from the Iowa and Oto tribes around 1700, killing or enslaving their opponents, while the U.S. government later negotiated with the Dakota and paid them for the land.
Oh, so our government bought land that the Dakota seized and killed people for and enslaved people for. Wow.
Worse yet,
you don't hear about that in school.
Put that in the pledge. Worse yet, she continues, the statement essentially compels vulnerable children to pledge allegiance to a divisive left-wing ideology that instructs them to view their fellow American citizens first and foremost as members of racial groups and only secondarily as individual human beings. The pre-pledge BLM affirmation is not ISD 623's only controversial practice. Attorney and mother Kofi Matska called out the district's board at the beginning of the school year after Roseville schools reportedly segregated kids based on race to talk about George Floyd's death.
Yeah, segregation is back in vogue. The left is pushing it so hard.
So awful.
They want a segregated society more than anything else.
Oh, very shortly before a Roseville principal declared that the traditional male-female dichotomy to be bigoted and BS, not using the words BS. A Roseville principal did this. Just last month, the Roseville School Board voted to endorse the views of a left-wing parent group and is now promoting the views of that group on his district website. Get your kids out of public school.
Especially out of Roseville.
Especially out of that particular public school. All right, coming up, got a lot to get to. We got Isaac Orr joining us in studio, and we'll talk about St. Paul and Minneapolis officially launching an all-electric car-sharing network and the possibility for rolling blackouts this summer. Next, though, keeping with the theme, a Minnesota summer camp, notorious for teaching kids leftist gender ideology, announced that it's changing what it is called due to a cultural appropriation associated with its previous name.
Video. Just a quick tip on water slides and being an adult. One thing, the wedgie factor is way higher with adults because of surface area, yada, yada, yada. So, just a heads up. Enjoy.
No, that's why you just go down the slides naked. You know, they don't worry about it.
Pro tip to the talkbackers, if you actually want me to use your talkback, do it on a bit and not on something serious. Infinitely more likely for me to pick. Infinitely.
And Drew didn't agree with me. I was just kidding.
I didn't want to go near that one.
I don't think I've ever gone.
I didn't want my voice to be within like 17 seconds of either side of that comment.
Never done
so
that.
So that I could not be associated with it at all whatsoever.
Never done that.
Thank God.
I don't know if I've ever skinny dipped either.
Oh my God.
What?
What?
Why? Why are we having this conversation?
People have. People
Me
do.
Me and John are on the same page here, and you're just...
People do.
Not going along with the bit.
You're right. Welcome back to Justice and... Well, it's just Justice.
Justice and Brett.
Justice and Drew on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. We now interrupt what we were going to talk about, and we're going to go live to the congressional hearing on UFOs. Take it away, Brett.
Huh?
This is what happens when you tell him ahead of time. I looked up on my TV right here, and Congress is holding hearings, public hearings, televised hearings on UFOs, first time in decades. Right now, Scott Bray, the Deputy Director of Naval Intelligence, is speaking. The Pentagon releases declassified UFO videos.
What?
It was one of those moments where, man, I wish I didn't have to go on the air. I'd like to be paying attention to this and see what's going on.
Nah, it all makes sense now, too. They just announced because Joe Biden's a lizard person.
That makes all the sense in the world.
Zing!
Yeah. I mean, if there are aliens among us, I think like Elon Musk would be probably one of my first choices of he's probably an alien. That guy's, he's just odd. He talks odd. He looks odd.
I have such a newfound respect for him after just watching some of those shows. Oh no, I know, and I certainly didn't take it that way.
He could be an alien.
But his
child's name's in alien language. I mean, yeah.
Elon Musk clearly is. You can see his nervousness. He's not necessarily all that comfortable being up in front. I know it doesn't appear that way. He's very open. He will do interviews. He will be interviewed. But again, I'll reference that Netflix special talking about the rise of SpaceX, which is just fascinating to watch, especially in light of this UFO hearing taking place right now. But in that, there's a moment where he's with reporters and he's like, "That's all I got today, guys. You know, it's just you don't want me answering any questions, anyways." And he just. You know, I think he's not, he's an individual that that is incredibly smart, did very, very well at a very early age, rose to prominence, uses a lot of common sense, but he is the most anti-Tony Stark, that he can be. Like, he's got all the machinations of a real-world Tony Stark, but he does not have the gravitas or the personality of a Tony Stark at all. That's just not his style. By the way, speaking of which, from the New York Post, new research speculates why aliens have never visited Earth, although according to this congressional testimony right now, this may not be true.
Is there anybody in the right state of mind that, like, wants this to... Like, what's best-case scenario with all... We gotta send them diagrams, and we gotta have hearings about... Like, best-case scenario, we never hear from them. That's best case. I don't... Yeah.
You think? I don't want that. You don't think there's a scenario where they would be benevolent? Where we might make contact with an alien civilization with advanced technology... And that they would see our sort of fledgling civilization here, at least in, you know, compared to theirs, relative to theirs, and say, we want to help you and we want to share some of our knowledge and technology with you to alleviate, say, global hunger or something along those. You don't think that's not a possibility?
It sounds about as likely as people being aware of their dogs being too loud and trying to make them be quiet. This is just not going to happen.
Cynical for 25.
There's no good scenario that happens from it. I don't understand the fascination with it. I'd rather just leave us alone and let us do our thing.
I know.
Worst case, we get blown up.
I know I'm probably... By the way, this story here basically says the researchers posit that alien civilizations could be doomed to either stagnate or die before they get a chance to visit Earth. So they said communicating with other civilizations, according to the National Academy of Sciences, is no longer something beyond our dreams, but a natural event in the history of mankind that will perhaps occur in the lifetime of many of us. So the question is, where is everybody? And they get into, right, they say that civilizations either collapse or burn out or redirect themselves to prioritizing homeostasis, a state in which cosmic expansion is no longer the goal, making them difficult to detect remotely. So they may be out there, but they may not be able to reach us, or we can't reach them. And I know I'm going to destroy a bit of my cred here. I'm sure I'm missing something, but have we had a story that goes the other way where we, I'm talking about a sci-fi story, where we as humans venture out into space and land on an alien civilization?
Star Trek: The Next Generation happened like every
I guess so. But that civilization hasn't evolved yet. Yeah, okay, like every so other that's in Star Trek. I never watched.
The whole thing of Star Trek.
I was big into the movies, yeah. But you know, I was yeah. Okay, all right. So that would be.
That was the prime directive was right. A big plot point in specifically The Next Generation. I'm sure in other iterations as well, but in The Next Generation, the prime directive was always coming into play about how
we
cannot interfere in the natural evolution of, you know, technology on these planets and these civilizations.
And that was a plot point at the beginning of Into Darkness.
Yes.
But I mean, but getting back to the question here, I mean, that's, I kind of look at it that way. Like, you know, everybody always sort of says, oh, they're going to be advanced technology and wipe us out and all that. I kind of go, well, what if we went the other way and we landed on a planet and it was a lesser life form? What would we do?
What would we do?
Yeah, well, just make sure that Trump's not there. Make sure the GOP doesn't find him first, right?
Democrats would be looking to tax him.
I need some of that money. Got to plant some trees.
A Minnesota summer camp. This is so stupid. A Minnesota summer camp. Notorious for teaching kids leftist gender ideology, announced that it's changing what it is called due to cultural appropriation associated with its previous name. Camp Tanaduna. Tanaduna? Am I saying that right? I'm assuming.
I don't know.
Camp Tanaduna will now be called Camp Fire Minnesota. Okay, why is wind, water, and air getting short shrift on this? In an email and a statement on its website, the camp said the name change is part of an effort to address past and current Native American cultural appropriation and to work diligently to repair harm. Now, they keep doubling down on this. The camp says it has caused harm and pain with the practices that are associated with this camp. The Camp Fire now, which used to be Camp Tanaduna, has used totem poles, gowns, language, stories, ceremonies, and many other practices that have been taken from or were made to mimic Native American or indigenous cultures. What is wrong with that?
I know. Was it doing those things in an attempt to educate children? Because if so, that's probably a good thing.
Right.
But was it making fun of him? Probably not.
I doubt it.
I'm going to guess if this camp already has a reputation of like pushing the boundaries on gender and sexuality issues with children, then I'm going to guess that they probably weren't mocking Native American culture with some of these practices.
The camp was recently featured by Alpha News when a parent reached out to express concern about sending her third grader to a day camp for a school field trip. The report detailed how the camp trains staff to host conversations and questions on kids' gender and sexuality. The parent also discovered that Camp Tanaduna encourages campers to share their pronouns after speaking with an education manager at the establishment. Okay, two things here. Just call it Camp Woke Minnesota and get it over with. That's one.
Yeah.
Just embrace it. Camp Woke Minnesota. And second, what happened to, archery, horseback riding, arts and crafts? You know, the things sort of typical of what you do. I mean, I went to summer camps. I enjoyed summer camps. Actually liked being outside as a kid. They were fun, right? But what happened to all... No, now we're doing gender and sexuality conversations and questions with kids instead?
I don't know why that's happening. Why is that such an important thing now in the last several years that these teachers and these camp counselors and all these young adults feel like I got to get in there and start talking to kids about gender and sexuality at the first available opportunity, even though I'm not their parent?
The recent announcement on the name change, Drew. Well, okay, this
I wonder why they get called groomers.
This makes all the sense in the. By the way, if I worked in like the dog or cat grooming industry, I'd be very upset right now. So you want to talk about appropriation?
You've appropriated my line of work.
You have. You walk into like Petco,
right?
And you walk past that now, and what do you see? You see groomer. It's like, oh,
what's going on in there?
Are you talking gender identity with these cats now? What's going on? I'd be very
a lot of time looking at that dog's underside. It's happening.
I would take groomer back.
Yes, let's do that. Let's get groomer back where it belongs.
So, the recent announcement, Drew, so maybe this makes a little bit more sense, right? Because it's timely. It came after the camp staff obtained a copy of the now Campfire Book of Names published in 1915.
Okay.
The camp has been in business for over 100 years. Tanaduna was a made-up word meant to sound like it came from a Native American language, the book confirmed.
So it wasn't appropriated from anything.
No, you just made it up.
It wasn't appropriated. Boom. Problem solved.
Oh, man. You know,
it's what's the issue? It's a made-up. Wait, all words are made up.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what's going to happen? All of my beloved Star Wars is going to start getting appropriated now. Because, like, Maz Kanata's planet was Taco Donna. And it was what sounds like it could be Native American.
I'm not even sure if you just spoke English.
Yeah, exactly. So I just appropriated, and now Chad's going to come in here and fire me. How dare you come and say that? On the camp's website, then details all the other times it reportedly appropriated culture. Campfire, again, has used all the things we mentioned before. And they go on to say that it's caused harm and pain with these practices, as leaders say, adding that they are now dedicated to repair our relationships with Native people and organizations. Did any Native people or organizations actually come to you saying that you caused harm, or are you just guessing? Are you just appropriating criticism? Are you just making bold assumptions that you caused harm? Oh, we've caused harm to the Native. Did anybody complain? Well, no, but we know that we have. Did anybody say anything? But no, but I bet. No, they probably don't. No. They're probably happy that you were actually sharing some of what their culture does.
Or they were just mocking you for using a completely made up word. Tanaduna. Making fun of you.
Yeah, they found out that it means like rotten cheese. You should keep calling your camp that. It's good. All right, coming up, find out what's going on with this congressional hearing on UFOs.
Yeah,
get Isaac Orr's take
more
from this.
More declassified UFO videos being released from the Pentagon. We got our energy guru Isaac Orr standing by in the wings, going to join us in studio for the next segment. He believes there's a possibility there will be brownouts and rolling blackouts.
I want to talk UFOs throughout. With him.
Yeah, we'll do.
Both. Oh, okay, cool. We'll all right.
If aliens were to give us technology, we would be like idiot children with machine guns.
Did you really just ask if the aliens would be benevolent? Have you never seen Independence Day? They almost killed Bill Pullman. Come on, son.
The benevolent alien movies and stories are never nearly as much fun.
I've also seen E.T., guys.
Yeah, but E.T. Okay. E.T. is the exception.
I've seen E.T., and he was adorable.
Freaked me out as a kid.
There you go.
Hold on. There you go. Better go there, Tim.
E.T. freaked you out as a kid?
Oh, my God.
Isaac Gore, our energy guru from the Center of the American Experiment, joins the program. Good morning.
Good morning. I still cannot watch alien movies because E.T. scared me that much.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Like, when he gets all white and, like, sickly.
Yeah.
Scientist.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was, like, 3 years old watching that. I was like, ugh, this is gross.
E.T., if I'm not mistaken, E.T. Well, E.T. was in the theater for a long time, so that was back when these movies had really, really long runs. But I remember my aunt taking me to the movies, and we went to the theater, and we had the choice between seeing Tron and between seeing E.T. And I was just bent on seeing Tron, because it was Tron.
Yeah.
And it was flashy and shiny. And she was like, no, don't you really want to go see E.T.?
Tron had a cool video game associated.
Yeah, I'm like, no, I want to see Tron. And she's like, okay. You know, and I saw Tron, and I like Tron, and I still love Tron. But then I saw E.T., same experience, though, because the opening of that movie, it's terrifying. The scary music and the whole start of it, fantastic film, though.
Yeah, yeah. But one thing,
they just trotted him out on the congressional hearing just a moment ago.
Yeah, he's about to testify. No, wait, that's Adam Schiff. Easy to get them confused.
Nicely done.
Easy
same
to
vocabulary.
Mix them up.
The E.T. video game, though, not nearly as good.
No, the E.T. video game is there's a fantastic documentary about that video game as well. I think it's floating around on Netflix.
Amazon. One or the other.
Let's argue over which streaming service.
Hulu, Peacock.
Yeah.
You know, but to that point, though, like. Kids, like E.T. is kind of a kids movie, right? It's a Spielberg movie, and it was marketed as a family movie. But, you know, there was a time not that long ago when they weren't afraid to put things like that into quote-unquote family movies that would scare kids. And it seems like they're so afraid to do that now. Like, they anything remotely, you know, controversial or might be scary, like, you know, you can't have that in what gets marketed as a family movie. But I think that makes for a more well-rounded movie experience.
You've seen Doctor Strange?
Yeah, but that's not marketed as a family movie.
It's a Disney movie.
But it's not marketed as a... It's not bring the kids to Doctor Strange.
No.
Multiverse of Madness.
Well, I'm sure someone is. And I can't believe I brought my kids to this.
Well,
somewhere.
E.T. now would be an interesting case study in sort of wokeness doing that thing with my fingers. Because I immediately am thinking of several scenes in that you just wouldn't get made today. Specifically the one where... E.T. gets drunk in the house, spoiler alert, you know, but he's tied to Elliot. Elliot's in the classroom letting the frogs loose, and the moment when he steps up on the box and grabs the girl, pulls her in while E.T.'s watching the John Wayne film and plants a kiss on her. Right. There's no way that would fly today.
Probably not.
That would be, you know, that would be forced.
If somebody
didn't ask permission.
Would be, no, can't do that. That could be triggering. We don't want to trigger anybody.
All right. Speaking of triggering,
when E.T. was in the closet and had the wig on and put the dress on, now all of a sudden that would be like his permanent identity.
There's another one. You're right.
It'd be permanently identity. We would all have right. to well, ask E.T. their pronouns.
We've just canceled E.T.
T.E.
How dare you say he's a terrestrial being extra? All right, Isaac Orr, Center of the American Experiment. Electricity demand in Midwest grid is expected to be strong this summer with hot weather and a growing economy sucking plenty of juice. At the same time, electricity supplies are tightening. The upshot, the risk of rolling blackouts is elevated, according to this story. Really? Are we going to get this? Because these suck.
It's a distinct possibility that we're going to have rolling blackouts this summer. So that's fun. I don't know why they describe it as the upshot.
I think they're trying to be glib.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Underlying this vexing outlook is the grid's transition from fossil fuel power to renewable energy. Power lost from retiring coal plants is exceeding the supply gained by new wind and solar farms, which is what you're here to talk about.
Yeah, I just want to let everyone know, big fat I told you so to Star Tribune, and, you know, at least they're finally saying the B word, blackout, right? So we've been talking about this at Center of the American Experiment for a really long time. When you shut down reliable coal-fired power plants and you try to replace them with things that you can't turn on, things that are reliant on the weather working in your favor,
bad things happen. Those bad things are blackouts. So Minnesota has systematically gone through, added 25% renewable power to the grid, so wind and solar. Thanks, Governor Pawlenty, for that beautiful mandate. Mm-hmm. And now we're shutting down our coal plants before they should be shut down. So we're at an elevated risk of blackouts. And Xcel Energy wants to shut down a coal plant next year. That's only going to make the situation worse.
Why? I mean, you would think like Xcel Energy would be the one entity out there in this whole conversation that would be like, hold on, guys. You know, we actually know how this stuff works. We know where the demand is coming from. We know which supplies are more reliable and consistent than other supplies. So let's pump the brakes on this. What is the incentive for Xcel to move forward on something like that?
Well, you would think that they would be the voice of reason, but they're not, because they're okay. So everyone thinks, you know, Xcel is a private company. They get to do whatever they want. Absolutely wrong, right?
Yeah.
Xcel Energy is a government-approved monopoly utility that exists because it has, you know, the blessing of the state of Minnesota to operate exclusively in its service territory. So utility companies do not make money from selling. They're not allowed to make money. The price of electricity is set by the state government at the Public Utilities Commission. So I know this sounds super in the weeds to everybody, but you know, Xcel Energy only gets to make a profit when they build new stuff, right? So the coal plants that they have don't make Xcel a profit anymore because utilities make money. It's called the cost of service regulation. And I understand this is not exactly engaging radio right now.
No, I'm fascinated.
It's super important to know.
Yeah.
Keep going. Yeah.
So, like, if you own a house.
It's up to us. We're going to talk about ET all segments.
Oh, man. Yeah. So if you own a house, when you pay that house off, that is the most affordable place for you to live. It's the best financial situation for you. Every year, part of Xcel's coal plant depreciates, and they don't get to make a government-guaranteed profit on that anymore. So basically what happens is once the coal plant has paid off its mortgage, it's producing the most affordable power for you and I. It's incredibly reliable, but Xcel Energy doesn't like it on its books because they don't get to make that sweet, sweet government guaranteed profit on it, right? So Xcel has a very strong financial incentive to shut down reliable, affordable plants that are completely paid off and reliable and build crap that doesn't work. And that's why you see all
this. That's how they're making their money.
That's how they're making record profits every single year.
And that's because of government.
Yes. It's because they have the exclusive, because you can't choose a different provider if the service sucks or the price gets too expensive. And I understand why that's the case. But right now, utilities are basically green plating their grids. They're price gouging the customer by building all of this green stuff that doesn't work. And the upshot is we get the sunny with the side of rolling blackouts. Mm-hmm. So
what does that look like? What do the rolling blackouts look like?
Yeah, so the thing about Minnesota is we share a grid with like 14 other states in the Canadian province of Manitoba, which should be a state. We're going to be rolling this power outage.
Did you just advocate for the annexation of Canada?
I would go with Alberta first.
Okay.
We can leave Eastern Canada. Let's take the best stuff there and let the rest curdle.
All right.
Yes,
I'm on board.
Alberta is the Texas of Canada, so we're taking them first.
Do it.
Justin Trudeau, get the treaty ready. We're taking it.
As a hockey fan, I'm all for Ontario first, because that's where the best hockey players are from. Get that U.S. program going.
No, but the Oilers are from Canada. Like, they're my favorite hockey team because it's oil, right? Yeah. I'm from Wisconsin. I have no dog in the hockey hunt, right?
Which is surprising.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm going to go with the one that's like the most oily. So, Oilers.
The oiliest team.
Well, the oiliest team. That's a hard word to say. So the rolling blackouts here are going to be probably temporary, right? So they'll be, you know, 2 hours in Minneapolis and then 2 hours in Madison, 2 hours in Chicago, just to make sure that nobody is having a situation like Texas where they just literally didn't have enough power and you had people going 72 hours without electricity. Because in the winter, I mean, in the summertime, it sucks because, okay, well, I'm uncomfortable, I'm warm. You know, if you have food in the fridge, it's going to be more likely to spoil. If you have medications, if you're on a dialysis machine, like all of that stuff is incredibly bad. But it's way worse when it happens in the wintertime, because if you don't have power, the blower fans on your furnace don't work. Like, people are more likely to die in a winter power outage than a summer power outage. But the fact that
summer power outages can be deadly too.
Absolutely. I'm not saying that they can't be, but right. I'm saying that
that's why you don't want power outages any time of the year.
Oh, wow. Who'd have thought?
Crazy idea, right?
So, what we need to do is make sure that we have enough power plants that work to make sure that we can cover our, you know, peak electricity needs. When we need the most electricity, well, let's just build a system that has enough reliable power plants online to make sure that we got that covered and stop messing around with all this renewable crap that doesn't work. And that's the big thing. Conservatives, Republicans, you need to stop saying all of the above. It's a totally garbage answer that, like, college students that don't study for their final exam try to bank on it in order to get some credit. Like, if you care about, you know, reliability, you go coal, you go natural gas, you go nuclear power. If you want to be, you know, reasonable, or like if you want to appear reasonable or moderate on climate change, and you want to make it look like you're doing something, hold the DFL's feet to the fire and make them legalize new nuclear power plants in this state, because Tim Walz has had 4 years to do that. He says climate change is an existential crisis. His climate action framework document, which is basically his policy vision for energy going forward, doesn't mention legalizing nuclear power once. They're totally unserious, and they're literally leading us to this cliff of rolling blackouts.
Well, and plus it's Minnesota, so wait until the politics enter into it, and then the rolling blackouts have to be, you know, attributed equitably.
Right.
You know, we can't have them disproportionately hurting certain segments of our population.
The moment that the rolling blackouts start, we'll get the articles about how the poor and the minorities are disproportionately impacted by the rolling blackouts, unless they want to provide cover for the DFL, in which they'll say this is actually good for the poor and minority communities, and it's disproportionately hurting those evil rich people. I don't know how they'll make that argument, but that's the only way they could possibly spin it.
Well, the worst part about it is going to hurt those people.
Of course it is.
Right? Yeah. So, like, that's why
everything does. When you are poor,
absolutely,
you suffer the disproportionate impact of nearly everything.
That's why American Experiment is now advertising about energy, like bringing the message of rational energy policy in Somali, Spanish, and we're also advertising on KMOJ.
Good.
Because we want those stakeholder groups who are going to be hurt the most by these bad liberal energy policies to understand why it's happening to them.
You mean the solar panels aren't going to save us? What about the windmills? We need more windmills.
The one in Maple Grove next to my house never works.
I've never seen it. Are we going down there to
there's a rumor that there's a motor in it. I don't have
I believe
totally
it.
Unsubstantiated
I believe it.
Rumor. If you're listening, Great River Energy, hit me up. Let me know. Is there a motor in your wind turbine?
The one decorative windmill in Maple Grove. Why is that there?
It's totally
decoration. Is that there?
It is the dumbest thing
ever. It's just a decoration. Yes. You might as well put the cherry and spoon next to it.
Yeah, that would actually be kind of cool.
Well, Isaac Orr, Center of the American Experiment, go to AmericanExperiment.org, and you can find all of Isaac's writings, as well as people like Kathleen Kirsten and everybody else over there, Bill Glahn, all the wonderful people involved with the center doing amazing work. Thank you for coming on the program. Always a pleasure to have you in studio with us and sharing this important information, because you're not going to hear about this from the Star Tribune.
That's right. Buy a diesel generator, people.
By the way, did you come over here on one of the new EV car share, the network of 171 vehicles that St. Paul and Minneapolis officially launched their new car sharing network?
I actually came over in a semi-truck, and I rolled coal all the way down.
Nice! That's American, just like this song.
Yes.
You know what those jets run on? Patriotism.
That's right. The eyes have got shades on. America. Tomorrow on the program.
There you go.
We've got Robbie Starbuck.
That's right, we do.
Calling in. I'm not quite sure why.
Because we were asked. We said sure.
Selling books is hard.
He's got a new book coming out. Also, we're going to talk about some of the shenanigans that took place in Tennessee, where he was hosed by the GOP establishment there.
Later on, we'll talk to his cousin, Cliff Caribou.
That's not.
I know.
Wow.
I know.
You're giving me a hard time for the dad jokes, for crying out loud.
Sorry.
All right. Enjoy the nice weather, everybody.
I should have jumped on the chicken joke bandwagon.
Go burn a tire.
I felt compelled to throw in a dad joke.